ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय This morning we're going to read from Canto 3, Chapter 5, and we're going to be discussing texts 5 and 6. We heard yesterday, we closed up Chapter 4, Vidura had left the bank of River Jumuna, and then he went to find Maitreya, and the beginning part of the next chapter, we had this little discussion about where along the Ganges, here in text 1 it says it was Haridwar. Shukadeva Goswami said, Vidura, the best amongst the Kuru dynasty, who was perfect in devotional service to the Lord, thus reached the source of the celestial Ganges, Haridwar, where Maitreya, the great, fathomless, learned sage of the world, was seated. I don't know how we found him. We found him. Vidura, who was perfect in gentleness and satisfied in transcendence, inquired from him, and one might wonder, he's all these perfect in transcendence, best of the Kuru dynasty. What does he have to ask anything for? And it wasn't just for fun, or sometimes Prabhupada speaks about this, that devotees will sometimes inquire for purpose of strictness or purpose of exercising their devotion. At least one thing we can say, Vidura knew that Maitreya had heard directly from Krishna the same message that Krishna had imparted. So he wanted to hear in disciplic succession. Not that what Vidura knew already wasn't in disciplic succession, but as he had attachment for Krishna, and Krishna had spoken what Maitreya had heard, he wanted to hear what Maitreya had heard. Inquired. Not just for strictness. Prabhupada writes, Vidura had already surpassed the fallible nature of the living entity in conditional life due to his being achyuta bhava. Achyuta bhava siddha. Perfection by dint of devotional service. Vidura, being a perfect devotee, encountering Maitreya, who had all good qualities, he approached him. And here's, so in this chapter, 5, it lays the foundation for about 2.5 cantos. There are questions, one by one, he's asking ranges of questions, which then are answered by Maitreya in chapters, full chapters, for one question or a cluster of questions on a similar topic. And the composition of the Bhagavatam is so sublime. Besides its disciplic succession, preceding all this detailed discussion of Paramam Stitim, the supremely situated position of Krishna, with details and details and details, because everything is resting upon him, and there's all these wonderful relationships when he's directly engaged in loving dealings with his devotees. There's details and details. There's all this nice preliminary discussion with Uddhava, who is just filled with love. He doesn't go into those details. It's a little bit like Vyasadeva taught Srimad Bhagavatam to Shukadeva Goswami. And when it came time for Maharaj Pariksit to receive instructions how to live the next 7 days of his life, the final 7 days of his life, Vyasadeva and Narada Muni sat in the audience and Shukadeva Goswami spoke, because they both knew, but they wanted to hear from Shukadeva, because he's Shukadeva. He's so qualified. So it's not they didn't want information. They had information. And similarly, then after he speaks, then Sutta speaks. And Sutta speaks what he heard from Shukadeva. And that's like hearing from Uddhava and then hearing from Maitreya. But we shouldn't make the mistake of thinking, oh, Maitreya is down here and Shukadeva Uddhava is... There is this spiritual, transcendental hierarchy of rasa, or intimacy with Krishna. But as we're hearing the glorification of Maitreya, he's completely full of realized transcendental knowledge, having just had the same association that Uddhava had, Krishna's association. Through that association, Maitreya became situated in perfection, and so he's now going to pass this on to Vidura. And details and details are going to follow in the coming chapters and cantos. So here's the first few questions, and then we'll discuss 5 and 6. Text 2, Vidura said, O great sage, everyone in this world engages in, guess what, fruitive activities to attain happiness. But one finds neither satisfaction nor mitigation of distress. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities. Please, therefore, give direction on how one should live for real happiness. Yenatma suprasediti. So this is just the prompt for expanding that verse from the first canto. And Maitreya obliges him. Text 3. O my Lord, great philanthropic souls travel on the earth on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to show compassion to the fallen souls who are averse to the sense of subordination to the Lord. Therefore, O great sage, please give me instruction on the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, so that he who is situated in the heart of everyone can be pleased to impart from within knowledge of the absolute truth in terms of the ancient Vedic principles delivered only to those who are purified by the process of devotional service. Beautiful verse. And now, this morning's text 5. 5 and 6 are connected. He starts getting, that was broad, then he starts getting specific. He wants to know about the process of creation. So that takes massive amount of description from Maitreya, a very important, detailed description. But the essence of that is to see the connectivity of all things with the Supreme. Because that's the basis of, philosophical basis of devotional service. If things aren't connected to the Supreme, then there's no basis for devotional service. Then the converse, if there is connection to all things, of all things with the Supreme, then those things have some place in devotional service. But supposing one's an atheist, and he doesn't see the connection, then it's up for grabs. It's whatever you want to make of it. This desire, that desire, it's a playground for different desires. That's how materialists see it. But that's not how a transcendentalist sees it, because he sees the connection. Not imaginative, not sentimental, but very clear, scientific explanation. So scientific that not only, oh, it makes sense to a scientist, but the push and the pull of the cause and effect of creation, ultimately it can, in fact, connect one to the Supreme. That is to say, one can get realization of the transcendent Lord who is the controller of all things through the medium of devotional service. That's magnificent. Instead of becoming entangled in what he's just described, search for happiness through fruitive activities, but two things, the happiness never happens and the distress never gets mitigated. The unwanted part doesn't go away and the wanted part doesn't happen. But there's an alternative, devotional service. So now he's asking, please describe the connection of all things with their source of emanation, and specifically those forms of the Lord, the Purusha avatars that bring the creation about. Please describe all of that. So here's his question. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds and the controllers of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regular principles for its maintenance. Note, he doesn't just go, can you describe Krishna's rasa dance and all those nice things? And once again, it's not like Vidura is an uneducated person. He's not asking for information. He's asking for the realization of Maitreya, how the Lord interacts. It's this paramam stitim. It's the loving transactions of the Personality of Godhead. And you'll see in just from the purport, embedded within the verse, there are these words that describe that the Lord is, he's independent and he's desireless. He's independent. He doesn't need anything. He's desireless. He doesn't want anything. But he does things, like he describes in Bhagavad Gita. He creates Chaturvarna Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. And after saying that, he says, but actually I do nothing. Because does nothing in the sense that we do something. We do something because we're lacking in something, and so we do something to get that which we're lacking. Fruitive activity. And just give it a nice title. Fruitive activity. But he's not like us. That's what the point is being made, and it's clarified in the purport. He's not like us. Don't make the mistake. He's like us. He's not like us. So if he's not like us, then why does he do something? And the answer is, out of love. That's what moves his heart, is love. So there are these living entities that are insulting and rebellious and mean-spirited and independent-minded and neglectful and bad. And he loves them. So it's going to be described in the answer as a beautiful description, detailed description, before creation, what's in the Lord's heart. That's how Maitreya describes it. It's really, really nice. But here's the question. He's independent. He's desireless. So what's in his heart that moves him to bring about creation? And then as the creation is unfolding, what is his role in relation to the creation that's unfolding? In Western theology, there are these two terms, theism and deism. I forget which is which. But one says, God creates and then that's it. And then another is God creates and he continues to be involved. And that this is, you know, for theists. Then the materialists come along and said there's no creator. But I think it's deism, where it's, he's like a watchmaker, he makes the watch, sells the watch. That's it, he doesn't have anything to do further with the watch. He just creates it. And that ideology was to put the responsibility on the human beings, how they use the watch, how they use creation. If there's a problem, it's how you've used creation. It's not the problem of the creator, the watchmaker. But then, theologically, that has a problem because then this whole thing is happening without God's attentiveness. He kind of capriciously, whimsically creates something and then, you know, checks out. See you guys later. Like, you know, someone that creates progeny and then abandons the progeny. So then this other idea is he creates and he's involved and then, oh, look at this. God's bad because he creates things where people suffer. And he could change it because he's God, but he doesn't, so he's bad. Or he made a mistake. And so it's the root is, why is there suffering? And people don't want to take responsibility. The blaming game, fault-finding game. He did it. It's his fault. There's a Christian saying that says, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I want to do good, but what can I do? Because, and so I indulge. Now what do I do about that weakness? It's not I take responsibility for the weakness and become strong by connecting to the strong. I'll just, you know, so they have different difference of theologies of, like at the beginning of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's the question by Maharaj Pariksit, what's to prevent living entities from having to endure the hells that are described in the fifth canto? And the answer to that question makes different religions or different theologies. Some say this, some say that, some say the other thing, and that's a foundational cornerstone of their religion, their theology of how you deal with sin and the reaction to sin. So this sinful tendency is rooted in envy, a desire to be an enjoyer independent of the supreme enjoyer. Raga dvesha samuti na dvandva mohina bharata. All living entities take birth in this material world, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate, dvesha. Raga and dvesha. I envy he who is the supreme enjoyer. I want to be the enjoyer. And that's the place where we are. So there's envious spirited people all over the place. It makes for problems. And so just keep to yourself. But then you get lonely. So we want to have relationships. And we don't turn our relationship to the one that can give us real happiness because we have dvesha. We live within our world of envy. And then downstream from envy comes lust, anger, and greed, and the other stuff. Beautifully described in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam with Daksha. It starts with his envy towards his son-in-law, or Shiva. And because of that envy, he can't stand the fact that his daughter is married to Lord Shiva. He has bad feelings towards Lord Shiva. When he goes off, he creates a yajna and invites all the big personalities in the whole universe, and presiding are Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, his father, and his... In one sense, he has a relationship with Lord Shiva as their brothers, because they both have the same father. But his idea is, he's subordinate, because my daughter, Sati, is married to Lord Shiva, and so he's my son-in-law. And when he enters into the assembly, everyone rises, because he's Daksha. He's expert in fruitive activities. That's what they want, fruitive activities. Yay, fruitive activities, expert. Let's show him respect. Everyone rises except two, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And Daksha is seething with envy. And with that envy, so many other anger, lust, greed. And start with the envy is towards Lord Shiva, but the envy is towards Lord Shiva is towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the root of envy is that. And we have so many problems. We don't want to deal with the root. We just want to make the problems perfumed. Or minimized or something. And that's the game of fruit. You cover the root by forgetfulness. More forgetfulness, please. I just have to more cleverly arrange, forever make adjustments in playing the game of avoiding Krishna. It doesn't bring happiness, what he's just said, and it doesn't dismiss the misery of material existence. So I want to hear about devotional service, to hear about devotional service, I want to hear about these nice arrangements of the controller of all energies and how he moves his energies. And specifically, I want my attachment for him to be strengthened. So please explain. Purport. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead from whom the three creative incarnations, namely the Purusha avatars, Karana, it's spelled different here, Karana Vashayi Vishnu, normally it's Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and Shirodakshayi Vishnu expand. I wonder if that's a typographical area. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas. In the verses, the word Triadisha. And the Isha of Triad, the Isha of the threes. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur presents it, he's in charge of the three modes, and he's in charge of those who are in charge of the three modes. Those who are in charge of creation, rather. Can mean either. So here Prabhupada chooses Krishna, who's in charge of the three Purusha avatars. The whole material creation is conducted by the three Purushas in successive stages under the external energy of the Lord, and thus material nature is controlled by him. And he goes the other way. Thinking material nature to be independent is like seeking milk from the nipple-like bag to the neck of a goat. Doesn't explain it, but you know the explanation is provided in length elsewhere. It's foolish. And the result is similarly disappointment. But the atheists hold the view. It's all just happening by the laws of nature, and we can go enjoy the material nature. No problem, no consequences, just be smart about it. Then, the Lord is independent and desireless. He does not create the material world for his own satisfaction, as we create our household affairs to fulfill our material desires. Actually, the material world is created, here's the purpose, for the illusory enjoyment of the conditioned souls who have been against the transcendental service of the Lord since time immemorial. That's one of the two reasons. To give them rebellious souls a chance to try to enjoy independently, even though you can't. So, therefore, it has to be illusion. And the illusion is, I'm enjoying. So the illusion is created. The other reason is rectification. So built into the illusion is illusory suffering, as illusory, the allure of illusory happiness. There's the deterrent of illusory distress. But actually neither have anything to do with the soul's real identity. But in the dream of material happiness, there's suffering. Intended to rectify the errant soul. But the material universes are full in themselves. There is no scarcity for maintenance in the material world. He just inserts that right in the middle. It's fruit of activities. People want to enjoy. The necessities, they're there. What's the requirement for endeavoring like anything for necessities when it's already there? Like Prabhupada would describe. So many times, persons that are struggling very hard, we invite them, don't struggle very hard, come and stay in our ashram, we'll provide you your necessities, nice cloth, nice food, chant, it's not difficult, do some little service, no, you got to struggle hard. They bought into the program, the struggle hard program. And even invite them out of the struggle hard program. And, oh, I have to struggle hard. And then they complain about this hard struggle. So the maintenance of the living entities, God is not whimsical. When he creates, he provides for necessities. Not knowing that there's a creator and there's an arrangement for their necessities, they struggle hard. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, the materialists are disturbed. When there is an apparent increase of population on earth, whenever there is a living being on the earth, however, his subsistence is immediately arranged by the Lord. The other species of living entities, who far outnumber human society, are never disturbed for maintenance. They are never seen dying of starvation. It is only human society that is disturbed about the food situation, and to cover up the real fact of administrative mismanagement, the emperor has no clothes, take shelter in the plea that the population is excessively increasing. If there is any scarcity in the world, it is the scarcity of God consciousness. That's Bhaktisiddhanta's phrase. Otherwise, by the grace of the Lord, there's no scarcity of anything. In the verse, not expanded in Prabhupada's purport, but there is some language here that's speaking about the various kalpas of the Lord, of His creation. So the akalpa, that term, or mahakalpa, indicates the life of Brahma. So from Vishnu comes Lord Brahma. And at the end of a kalpa, everything in creation is annihilated, including the body of Lord Brahma, and the soul of Lord Brahma goes to its proper destination. And then there's a resting period, and then another creation. So the indication is, Vidura wants to know, are there two things? Are there details of differences in the different creations? And because they're different descriptions, they're narrations, authentic narrations that describe things a little differently. Are they bona fide? How to understand the differences? And the answer is, in short, there are different creations and there are details that are different. But then the other question is, are there principles that drive the creation? And what are those principles that drive creation? So Maitreya is going to describe both. What are the principles that drive the creation? Behind is Lord Vishnu. And he's doing on as a service on behalf of Krishna, who is the controller of material nature. He's doing the controlling. Vishnu is Maya Dakshina Prakriti. But ultimately, that capacity, its position that he assumes as an expansion of Krishna for the purpose of creation. Behind everything, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there. The process of devotional service is to connect us to him. So we need to know the connection of all things with him so we can be connected with him as we're moving about, living life and engaging in the goal of life. Next, text 6. He lies down on his own heart, spread in the form of the sky. This is speaking of the Virat Rupa. So without announcing it, because it's condensed, he's asked about Vishnu, Krishna, Vishnu, now Virat. He lies down on his own heart, spread in the form of the sky, and thus placing the whole creation in that space. Creation goes into the vastness of the sky. And the vastness of the sky in the Virat is said to be the heart of Virat, the universal form. And within the heart rests everything. And it makes sense. The heart is the seat of he who is desireless, that is to say, has no material desire, has a spiritual desire. He has love. And there's living entities that are rebellious. So within his heart, which is manifest as the sky of the universal form, he manifests everything within his heart, within the sky. Very nice. He expands himself into many living entities, not just his own personal forms, but the living entities are also expansions. Tiny, fragmental expansions. Ami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So he, there is the living entities, we, are his expansions, which are manifested as different species of life. So then it's fast-forwarded very quickly, expanding into this Virat, the heart of the Lord, the sky. There is now very quickly living entities. So going back to the second canto, there's a chapter, Purusha Sukta confirmed. In the Purusha Sukta prayers from the Rig Veda, it describes from the Purusha forms the whole of creation, including, you know, the details, the species of life. So this is just, you know, again, a very capsulized, and it's going to be then expanded in the answer given by Maitreya. So from the Lord come the living entities, and from the living entities within the what is going to be the creation, varieties of species are generated by him. Next, he does not have to endeavor for his maintenance, because he is the master of all mystic powers and the proprietor of everything. Thus, he is distinct from living entities. So we've already heard in the previous verse one of the ways that he's distinct. He's independent and desireless. Living entities are not independent, they're dependent. And at least the conditioned souls are filled with desire. If they become situated in a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord, then they have, they're desireless in the material sense. But now we're speaking of creation, or Vidura is asking about creation. So the Lord, even in relation to creation, he's desireless. Living entities have lots of desires. Now here's another one. He doesn't have to endeavor for his maintenance. Living entities, it's provided for them, but there's work they must do to receive their maintenance. It's devotional work, or at least karma yoga. And if they're just completely forgetful, then they can say, God doesn't exist, I'm just being maintained on the strength of my own work. Kartaham itamanyate. They can think like that, but they're distinct from, their maintenance is coming from their karta, at least, from the materialistic point of view, their endeavor. And through my endeavor, I'm getting my necessities. But Krishna doesn't, the Supreme Lord doesn't have, isn't, is distinct. Everything comes from him, because, so his maintenance is taken care of, but he is Yogeshwara. Purport. The questions regarding creation, maintenance, and destruction, which are mentioned in many parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are in relation to different millenniums, parentheses, kalpas, and therefore they are differently described by different authorities when questioned by different students. There is no difference regarding the creative principles and the Lord's control over them, yet there are some differences in the minute details, because they're different kalpas. I mentioned this already. Next, the gigantic sky is the material body of the Lord, called the Virat Rup, and all material creations are resting on the sky, or the heart of the Lord. It's kind of metaphorical language, but on the other hand, it's the Virat Rup is a form, temporary, but it's a form. And the whole of creation is resting on this Virat Rup, from higher to lower planets, front side, back side, and all around. That's how the Virat Rup is described. Second canto. Here's third canto. Therefore, from the beginning from the sky, the first material manifestation, to the gross vision, down to the earth, everything is called Brahman, meaning Mahad Brahman. There are these three different ways that Brahman is used. The effulgence of the Lord, the living entity, and material nature. And commonly the impersonalists, like, you know, they equate the effulgence of the Lord as everything, and living entities are also Brahman, so I'm everything. And then there's the Mahat Brahman. They just dismiss that. That's false. So here, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, quote, there is nothing but the Lord, and He is one without a second, unquote. The living entities are the superior energies, whereas matter is the inferior energy, and the combination of these two energies brings about the manifestation of this material world, which is in the heart of the Lord. Those two energies are His energies, and those two energies are resting in the heart of the Lord, or the sky, which is one of His energies. Now, the living entities that are in material creation, their real resting place is the Supreme Lord. But forget the Supreme Lord, in forgetfulness, you just see material nature. And if you forget the Supreme Lord, then the next consequence is you forget the soul. You just, I'm this body. So we're resting in space. And then there's matter resting in space, and that's all there is for the materialist. So the beginning stage is, wait a minute, we're spirit soul. That's where Bhagavad Gita begins, or transcendental knowledge begins, as we were discussing yesterday about different stages of transcendental knowledge. Beginning is Sankhya, we're spirit, not matter. And matter is resting in the Lord, spirit is resting in the Lord, everything is resting in the Lord. He is the controller of matter. And we have minute independence in terms of whether we can turn our attention to the Lord or just look at matter and turn our attention away from the Lord. Devotional service is to turn our attention again to the Lord and see matter in relation to the Lord and act appropriately. Engage it in the Lord's service. Quite a contrast from the fruit of activities program of the entire creation, whatever the species, with, you know, more sophisticated intelligence or more dull intelligence trying to become enjoyers of matter. So this is the, you can say, philosophical foundation of the other alternative, devotional service, rather than just saying devotional service kijai. That's good. And then there's details. It's something like the biblical description in Genesis of God created heaven and earth, and He did it in 7 days, and each day was something, and He said, and let there be something, and so it was. And He said, this is good. Okay. That's a theistic conception. Then there is the Bhagavad conception that, yes, He's the source of everything, and here is exactly how it happens. It's not in contradiction to, we don't have an argument or an issue with Genesis. It's just a very, 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 very simple explanation. And then there's a more complete explanation. So if someone questions, well, wait a minute, what about, you know, this law of nature, that law of nature, and doesn't it happen just by laws of nature? There's a detailed explanation. Why would devotees be interested in that? Or do you really have to know all that stuff in order to go back to Godhead? The answer is no. A simple heart that accepts the personality of Godhead as the cause of all causes and our ultimate shelter and source of everything, that's sufficient. At the same time, there are those that that's not good enough for them. They have another, there's all variety, and they have another nature, and they want to know, well, wait a minute, what about, and they have questions. And so the answers to those questions are there because factually everything does come from the Lord, and here's how it happens. So it's not just to satisfy the intellectuals instead of the simple-minded souls, because intellectuals that are not simple-minded aren't going to understand this. They'll read something else into it. But it's for the purpose of increasing our appreciation in simple language. How wonderful is my Lord? And persons with different inclinations, how wonderful is my Lord? No one, the smartest someone, could never figure this one out. They're trying. A lot of what they're trying is to study material nature and then replicate it, making technology, making airplanes and making this and that and the other thing. Study what nature does. I don't know if this is a fact, but Badri Narayan said when the engineers that were figuring how to make the Bay Bridge in San Francisco, they studied for a long time spider webs. I don't know, makes sense. And based upon how spider webs work, they made that bridge. Yay, it's made a bridge. But wait a minute, how did the spider know how to make his spider web? He didn't go to spider school. Anyway, you get the idea. So behind the creation, there's this fantastic intelligence of how to do it and how to repeat it over and over again. And how wonderful is my Lord? That's the idea. However, you know, take it from this side, that side, the other side, how wonderful is my Lord? And that's the springboard for bhakti. Okay, to be continued. Any discussion? Yeah, yeah. Whether we know it right now, it's an energy. That's a nice question. I don't know the answer. The image that I have in my mind, you know, not on the basis of scripture, is it's there because it's an energy of the Supreme Lord, but you know, perhaps in another form, in a subtle form. But you know, the message is all the energies are. Well, let me do a little research. I think it's in the 12th canto, the withdrawing of the energies of the Lord, and you know, when you get down and down and down and down, you know, what's the last step? It could be that it's in a subtle form, and everything rests in that subtle form, because then once again, it's expanded. So in this canto, it's described there's pradhan, which is the subtle form of but undifferentiated matter. And the first element that manifests is not sky, it's false ego. So with that, just intuitively or deductively, space as we know is withdrawn and amalgamated, is the language that is used, into pradhan, or the unmanifested state of yukta state. And then for that matter, virat rupa is gone. So virat rupa is at the heart. Without the heart, how do you have virat rupa? Or how do you have virat rupa if you don't have the heart? So withdrawn. I'll do a little research and see. Backwards, the withdrawal of creation, what's described. well, variety. Yeah. Yeah. They're floating on the Garbhodak ocean. It's the Garbhodak ocean. And, you know, Prabhupada discusses when, you know, what's supporting the Garbhodak ocean? Because oceans have an ocean floor. And the answer is there doesn't need to be one. The Garbhodak ocean is that when the earth falls to the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean, what's at the bottom of the ocean? There's no bottom of the ocean. It's just the Garbhodak ocean. Well, wait a minute. You know, an ocean that's just floating in what? No bottom, and if there's no bottom, well, wait a minute. And was it floating in? Wait a minute. Couple of wait a minutes. It's the Lord's potency. He's manifesting his potency. So it's not that the universe is not floating in the Garbhodak ocean, they're floating in the causal ocean. The same, you know, what's the ocean floor? It doesn't have to be an ocean floor, it's just an ocean. An ocean of his energy. And the universes are floating in that ocean. And from his body comes this ocean. Something else? Yes. Well, yeah. There's our constitutional position of service, and in the mature stage, a particular service with a particular rasa. So that's his desire. Come to that position. That's his desire. But we're too busy saying no. But again, that's a constitutional desire. In general, our love, and more specifically, our service, and more specifically, our particular service in our spiritual form with the variegatedness of love. And it's not that he wants it for himself, he wants it for us. That's another important point. That's this desireless. When Maitreya explains, it's very clear, very explicitly clear. There's no insufficiency on his side. He sees the desire of living entity. He sees that it's a disruption for the real happiness. But they're desiring, so he creates. And then there's steps in that creation. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada.